Comfort in a troubled world. Paul knew what a troubled world was. He ran into trouble just about everywhere he went. And he says in verse 8, I do not want you to be ignorant, brethren, of our trouble. What does his trouble look like? Well, if you were to look in 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 9 to 13, it would include all these things. We are counted as men condemned to death. We have been made a spectacle to the world. We are fools for Christ's sake. We are weak. We are dishonored. We both hunger and thirst. We are poorly clothed, beaten, homeless, being reviled, persecuted, defamed. We have been made as the filth of the world, the offscouring of all things. That doesn't sound very comfortable, does it? And yet that's his experience. That's the turf of ministry. You really want to know what he had to suffer? Keep your finger there in chapter 1. Turn with me over to chapter 11. 2 Corinthians chapter 11. Now remember, Paul is talking about comfort, the God of all comfort. And yet he experienced that even in these circumstances. 2 Corinthians chapter 11, look with me beginning at verse 24. From the Jews, 5 times I received 40 stripes minus 1. A whipping was 39 stripes. He got that 5 times. Verse 25, 3 times I was beaten with rods. Once I was stoned. 3 times I was shipwrecked. A night and a day I have been in the deep. In journeys often, in perils of waters, in perils of robbers, in perils of my own countrymen, in perils of the Gentiles, in perils in the city, in perils in the wilderness, in perils in the sea, in perils among false brethren. In weariness and toil, in sleeplessness often, in hunger and thirst, in fasting often, in cold and nakedness. Besides the other things, what comes upon me daily, my deep concern for all the churches. That was Paul's world. That was his experience. And in that context, he speaks to us of comfort and the God of all comfort. And yet we have to understand the depth of this trouble. He says, we were burdened beyond measure, above strength. That idea of burdened is an allusion to an animal that sinks under a weight beyond its strength to hold up. I remember often as a missionary kid growing up in South America, we lived in a mountain town, we lived in a city down, and people would come down from the mountains and they would bring their donkeys, their burros, and they would shop and they would load them up on the donkeys expecting the donkey to make it back up the mountain. And oftentimes, we even have videotape of it, of this donkey just collapsing underneath the weight that people were heaping onto it. And that's the idea here. Paul was having the sense of just having to collapse under the weight that was being put upon him. He was burdened, he says, beyond measure, above strength. To the point, he says, so that we despaired even of life. This word despair is a strong word. It means the total unavailability of an exit. The walls were closing in. No way out. And that's what he felt. That's what he experienced. No exit from oppressive circumstances. And that's why he said, in ourselves we had the sentence of death. Paul and his companions had resigned themselves that this is it. Today we're going to die. Serving the Lord. They were, at certain points, pretty sure of it. But the reason why that happened, he says in verse 9, yes, we had the sentence of death in ourselves, that we should not trust in ourselves, but in God who raises the dead. We should not trust in ourselves, but in God who raises the dead. I like what Charles Hodge says, there is no such thing as implicit confidence or reliance on God until we renounce all confidence in ourselves. Now, we have to understand that in its right context. It's not just a simplistic let go and let God, because we are called to be stewards of the things that God has entrusted to us. And we're going to be talking about that a little more here in a moment. We are called to a stewardship. But what we need to understand is who's in control of things. Are they my possessions? And is it my life? Is it my circumstances? Am I in control of it, or am I a steward? There's a big difference between the two. Now, as we read this and we talk about the severity of Paul's hardship and difficulty, we might think, you know, I can't relate to that. I don't experience anything like that. I've never had to, particularly for my faith. I've never had to experience anything. And it's very difficult for us to relate to this because, particularly here in the West, we can be so cushioned from the harsh realities of life by all the stuff that we can surround ourselves with. So we don't know what it is to experience hardship like this. So maybe it might help us if we understand it through the eyes and the experience of someone that we do know. For example, several years ago, my wife and I hosted an Egyptian couple, Medhat and Mona El Beblawi. They are both physicians in Aswan, Egypt, and they are going through a significant amount of persecution now over in Egypt because of the political uprisings up there, and they are particularly targeting Christians. And Medhat writes this, just this last week, he wrote this email. This is a man who has stood on this platform in this room. And he writes this from Egypt. We are sure that you are praying for us, especially in the situation our country is going through. Today, I'll talk in our church in Aswan in the evening meeting, and the Lord is guiding me to talk with the congregation about the fires which had destroyed about 45 churches and about 35 other buildings belonging to churches such as bookshops, schools, and even orphanages. Totally about 80 Christian buildings within 2 days of destruction. I'll talk about, quote, can fire burn our faith? Please pray for the message that it talks to me and to the audience as well. Hardship, circumstances beyond one's control. Burdened with a very heavy weight. In that context, Paul says, we can be comforted with the God of all comfort. Here's part of the problem. The focus today is we should not trust in ourselves. If we are going to know the comfort of the God of all comfort, it begins with understanding that He is the God of all comfort, and secondly, that we should not trust in ourselves. But here's the problem. We have a problem with what is called self-sufficiency. And we need to be rescued from that, which is why Paul says we should not trust in ourselves. A few years ago, Google released a database of over 5 million books published between the year 1500 and 2008. You can now type a search word into the database and discover how often words have been used over the centuries. It's pretty cool, isn't it? Of course, you knew that because you Google all the time. I'm sure of it. Based on this data, the New York Times columnist David Brooks offers what he calls the story of the last half century. The first part of the story is the rise of individualism. In the past 50 years, individualistic words and phrases increasingly overshadowed communal words and phrases. For instance, the following individualistic words have been used more frequently: self, personalized, I come first, I can do it myself. In contrast, the following communal words have been used less frequently: community, share, band together, common good, and so on. The second part of the story Brooks sees is the decline in moral virtue. Certain words were especially hard hit, including words associated with this: courage and gratitude. Courage and gratitude. We don't use those words much anymore. And words associated with them. And you know what? Therein is the definition of comfort of which Paul speaks right here in 2 Corinthians. Courage and gratitude. It's lacking. But all the following words have dropped in usage: modesty, humbleness, discipline, honesty, patience, faith, wisdom, and even the word evil. It's dropped in usage. Why do we say this? And why does Paul need to illustrate to us that even in the despair of his situation, he says, so that we should not trust in ourselves? Because there is the problem with self-sufficiency. We can so easily delude ourselves into thinking that I'm in control. And if you've been a part of any kind of business opportunity or something like that, or conferences or seminars. The overly positive messages are there. You are, if you believe, you can achieve, right? And all that good stuff. And you are the master of your destiny. Let me present the scriptures to you today. You are not the master of your destiny. This is what Paul is telling us, even in his own circumstances. And he was in circumstances that were well beyond his control, to the point that he was certain he was going to die. So you need to learn this. We need to learn this from the scriptures today. I am not the master of my destiny, but a follower under his sovereignty. I am not the master of my destiny, but a follower under his sovereignty. Therein we find the comfort from the God of all comfort. When I understand this, let me illustrate that with this story. Jimmy and his son, Davey, were playing in the ocean down in Mexico while his wife, daughter's parents, and a cousin were on the beach. Suddenly, a rogue riptide swept Davey out to sea. Immediately, Jimmy started to do whatever he could to help Davey get back to the shore, but he too was soon swept away in the tide. He knew that in a few minutes both he and Davy would drown. He tried to scream, but his family couldn't hear him. Jimmy's a strong guy, an Olympic decathlete, but he was powerless in this situation. He was carried along by the water, and he had a single chilling thought. My wife and my daughters are going to have a double funeral. Meanwhile, his cousin, who understood something about the ocean, saw what was happening. He walked out into the water where he knew there was a sandbar. He had learned that if you try to fight the riptide, you will die. So he walked to the sandbar, stood as close as he could to get to Jimmy and Davy, and then he just lifted his hand up and said, "Come to me, come to me." If you try to go the way your gut tells you to go, the shortest distance into shore, you will die. But God says, if you come to me, you will live. And that's it. It's death or life. I believe the Apostle Paul understood this. He was not the master of his destiny. He was simply following under God's sovereignty. And who is this God? The God of all comfort. As we follow under his sovereignty, what does he say here in verse 9? That we should not trust in ourselves, but in God who, what? Raises the dead. Now, what does that tell us about God? The God who raises the dead. He is the master of life and death. The very reason why I should follow him and not trust in myself. Not only is he the God who raises the dead, but he is the God who knows the beginning from the end. He is infinite. He is a transcendent God. He is not bound by space and time. Everything that can be known, he knows it all here, right now. Comprehensively, completely. Wherever you're going to be 10 hours from now, 10 years from now, God's been there. He's already there. Walk with him there. Follow him. Follow under his sovereignty. Not only is he the God who raises the dead and knows the beginning from the end, but he is the God who cares for me and loves me deeply. Do I understand that? Not only is that true, but he is also the God who works all things together for my good. Why? Because I love him and I'm called according to his purpose. You see, Paul understood that. That's why in Paul's writing here, there's no panic. There's no alarm. Even though he was certain that he was going to have to pay with his life. But he knew that he was not the master of his destiny. He simply followed under God's sovereignty. The God who raises the dead, who knows the beginning from the end, who cares for and loves me deeply. and who works all things together for my good. You see how a right understanding of God is both practical and paramount in the day to day? All the indicatives of Scripture that tell us who God is and what God is like, it is most important for us to understand God for who He is. Because if you don't have an accurate understanding of God, you will not know the comfort of the God of all comfort. But Paul did. And so he encourages us to be comforted by the God of all comfort, as he even speaks of his own experience there. Having a right understanding of God is practical in the day to day, but it is also paramount in the day to day. And we sing that in the song that we sing here often, and we will sing it at the close today. From life's first cry to final breath, Jesus does what? Commands my destiny. Why? Because he knows it all. And so I walk with him there. I follow him there. If we are to know the God of all comfort and the comfort that comes from him, what would be the opposite of that? If you're not having a good day, things just aren't going your way, right? What picture comes to your mind? What do you call that? It begins with S. Stress. I know. You've been there, all right? Don't fool me. You've been there. Stress. Why do we get stressed out? Very much related to, you know, heart disease and stuff like that. Why do we get stressed out? We get stressed out when we feel that we're not in control. When there is uncertainty in our lives. And we get stressed out. They've done many, many tests on this. For example, a very, very simple one. If you're in your work cubicle and there is music playing and you have no control over the volume or the genre of music, and you find it so distracting and it becomes very, very stressful to you because you're not in control of that. However, if you are in control of the volume and the genre of music, no stress there at all. Maybe for somebody else, right? But not for you. But if you feel that you ought to be in control and you're not in control, then that creates a great amount of stress in your life. This is an interesting find here. According to an article in Time magazine, hundreds of millions of people around the world do crossword puzzles, play Sudoku, and participate in puzzles on their computers, phones, and tablets. Why are puzzles so wildly popular all around the globe? Will Shortz, a Crossroads editor of the New York Times and NPR, has this to say. We are faced with problems every day in life, and we almost never get clarity. We jump into the middle of a problem, we carry it through to whatever extent we can to find an answer, and then we just find the next thing. But with a human-made puzzle, you have the satisfaction of being completely in control. You start the challenge from the beginning, and you move all the way to the end. That's a satisfaction you don't get much in real life. You feel in control, and that's a great feeling. I think that's brilliant. Nothing wrong with them, obviously, but that he says that's a satisfaction you don't get much in real life. You feel in control. And something about us needs to have that, doesn't it? But you know, we're not in control. And the more we try to be in control, the more stressed out we get. Lack of control and uncertainty are huge contributors to stress and all kinds of physical disorders and emotional disorders. There are health issues. There's relational issues that are beyond our control. There's sometimes discrimination that happens, whether it's religious or some other kind of discrimination. There's lack of friendship and support, and those sometimes are things that are beyond your control. Surroundings, you know, the crime rate in your world, the political unrest, your job, the economic uncertainty, all of these things are circumstances that can be beyond our control. But if I try to control them, if I try to manipulate circumstances and relationships and all of that stuff, then that adds to me the pressure of being the one upon whose shoulders rest my success and my security and all of that. And that's more of a weight than I can handle. And I need to recognize, I need to surrender myself to the understanding that I am not the master of my destiny. I simply follow under His sovereignty. And when I surrender to Him, That's when I find the comfort that comes from the God of all comfort. What does surrender mean? Let me put it very simply. And it's this. Simply follow. Simply follow. The Lord says, come to me. Come to me. Let him rescue you from thinking that you have to be in control. Let him rescue you from thinking that you even can be in control. Paul wasn't in control of his circumstances. Now think about it. Could he have been? He was ministering. He was being an effective minister for God. He was fulfilling his call. Could he have been in control of his circumstances? He could have. In what way? He could have shut up. He could have said, I'm not going there. And if those people start countering me, I'm just going to be quiet and walk away. If they're going to tell me I can't preach in the name of Christ, I'm going to say, oh, okay. In that way, he could have been in control of his circumstances, but he would have also been negligent of his call. He would not have been a good steward of the call that was upon his life. You see, the scriptures say, draw near to God and he will what? Draw near to you. Do you believe that? Draw near to God and he will draw near. That's exactly what Paul was doing here. You see, if you surrender to him, as in simply following him, following under his sovereignty, then that will lead you to be a good steward of the call. It's not a matter of ownership and control. It's a matter of stewardship. A stewardship is something that has been entrusted to you. You don't own it. Neither do you ultimately control it, but you are a steward of it. And you may be called to be an engineer, a physician, a lawyer, a contractor. You know, all of us have three calls, at least three calls upon our lives, and all of us have two of them in common. This is a little bit extracurricular here, okay? No extra charge for this. Three calls upon our lives. You are first called to become like his son. All of us have that in common. Secondly, you are called to be a minister of reconciliation. All of us have that in common. The third call is where the diversity comes. Some of you are called to professional careers. Others are not. Some of you are called to be professors, teachers, lawyers, physicians. Some of you are called to be painters, contractors. That's a calling. I'm called to be a pastor. Pastors aren't the only ones called. Did you know that? You have been called. You are a steward of that call. You're not in control of it, but you are a steward. And when you understand that, then you will understand the comfort that comes from the God of all comfort. You see, this is what Paul knew. And we're going to see that because he is now teaching us under these hard, difficult circumstances beyond his control. He was teaching us about the God of all comfort, even from his own experience. So how did he find comfort in a troubled world? What I want to do now is define this word comfort. It's the word, it's from the Latin word comfortis, to come alive. It's the Greek word parakaleo, paraklesis, the verb in the noun form translated, which means come alongside or to call alongside. And God calls us alongside of himself. The comforter comes alongside of us, draw near to God, and he will draw near to you. Therein we find the comfort of God. And it's to come alongside, the Latin word comfortis, with strength. with strength. So let's use this definition now for this word comfort. It is confident courage persevering with praise. That's the comfort of which the Apostle Paul speaks. That's far beyond just a warm feeling of a normal life. A lazy boy and a full fridge and a 54-inch plasma. Okay? It's confident courage persevering with praise, even in the context of hardship. Because that's why how Paul speaks here. The hardship, comfort in a troubled world. It's confident courage, as he says, he will still comfort us. Confident courage. He's plodding ahead. He's moving ahead. There's a perspective that's involved in this. I like how Henry Nouwen puts it. Listen to what he says. Since many sporting events take place when I am not at home, I record them. When it's time to sit in my easy chair and view the event, I'll advance to the climax to discover who won and who lost. You've done that, I know. Some of you read books that way. If my team lost, I'll walk away. But if my team won, I'll go back to the beginning, get some snacks, and watch the whole game. Why is that? Some have told me that this method can't be much fun. On the contrary, no matter how bad things look for my team, I don't have to worry because I know the end of the story. Here you go. It's the big picture. I have a question for you. Do we know the big picture? We do. So why do we fret? Paul teaches us that. The God of all comfort, even in troubling circumstances, even in circumstances where we despair of life, he can say, we should not trust in ourselves, but in God who raises the dead. I know how it all works out in the end. You see, this is confident courage. And Henry Nouwen continues with this. The great spiritual task facing me is to so fully trust that I belong to God, that I can be free in the world, free to speak even when my words are not received, free to act even when my actions are criticized, ridiculed, or considered useless. Free also to receive love from people and to be grateful for all the signs of God's presence in the world. I am convinced that I will truly be able to love the world when I fully believe that I am loved far beyond its boundaries. Do you think the Apostle Paul understood that? I do, and that's why he was able to encourage us to find comfort in the God of all comfort, even in the most extreme hardship of cases. Comfort of which the apostle speaks, parakleo, comfortis in Latin, is not only confident courage, but it's persevering with praise. Confident courage, persevering with praise, in whom we trust that he will still deliver us. What is this? This is Paul's stewardship of the call. He says, you know what? I know more hard times are coming because it comes with the territory. There is a system out there that does not like my message. And the hardships will keep coming at me. But I am going to persevere with praise in the confident courage that comes from the God of all comfort as a steward of the call placed upon my life. Here we go. And that's what he does. But it's persevere. It's not just persevere. It's not just hunkering down and finding the true grit. It's persevering with what? Praise. Which says in verse 11, you also helping together in prayer for us that thanks may be given by many persons on our behalf for the gift granted to us through many. He has learned to be abased and he's learned to abound. But he knows where it all comes from. He's simply following under God's sovereignty. And in that he finds his comfort. And he's able to persevere with praise. Because what's here and now isn't all there is. Isn't that good to know? What's here and now, what's happening in my life right now, that's not all there is. There is a big picture. Keep your gaze fixed on the objective and understand the big picture. And Paul did that. His last writings, 2 Timothy. Here's what he says toward the end as he's writing young Timothy. 2 Timothy 4, 6 to 8. For I am already being poured out as a drink offering. He was in jail waiting for his execution. And the time of my departure is at hand. And he's not talking about a flight departing to another country, okay? I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. Stop right there a moment. Let's not put the Apostle Paul up on this big, huge spiritual pedestal and say, yeah, he can say that, but I could never say that. You can say this. If you know the God of all comfort, and you understand that you should not trust in yourself, but in the God who raises the dead, you'll be able to say this because you will have comfort from the God of all comfort. You will have that confident courage persevering with praise. And you'll be able to say exactly the same thing. You'll be moving ahead, waiting for God to say what? Well done, good and faithful servant. As a steward of the call. You see, Paul understood the big picture. And that's why he could tell us about this comfort from the God of all comfort. When I surrender, when I don't trust in myself, but I surrender and I follow under His sovereignty. To conclude today, I want to bring your attention to a text of Scripture in Jeremiah chapter 17 that complements this highly. Same message. Jeremiah chapter 17. Turn there with me. You need to see this. There's a curse and there's a blessing. Verse 5, Jeremiah 17, 5. Thus says the Lord. Are you listening? Cursed is the man who trusts in man and makes flesh his strength, whose heart departs from the Lord, for he shall be like a shrub in the desert and shall not see when good comes, but shall inhabit the parched places in the wilderness in a salt land which is not inhabited. Sounds rather dry, doesn't it? Verse 7. Blessed is the man who trusts in the Lord and whose hope is the Lord. For he shall be like a tree planted by the waters, which spreads out its root by the river and will not fear when heat comes. But its leaf will be green and will not be anxious in the year of drought, nor will cease from yielding fruit. Did you get that? Those are God's words. Know that. Know that. You know what's very, very interesting? Do you know what the next verse is? Jeremiah 17, 9. It's a very well-known verse. The heart is what? Deceitful, above all things, and desperately wicked. What is he telling us? Listen, we can deceive ourselves into thinking that we are in control. And if that's what I'm thinking, then I am calling a curse upon myself. The curse of being parched and dry, and not knowing the comfort of God. But if I surrender that and follow under His sovereignty, then I will know the blessing of God. I will know the comfort of the God of all comfort. Do you know that control? Are you pursuing that control, or are you pursuing that comfort from the God of all comfort this morning? May God search our hearts. He knows them. He knows our hearts. May we be honest before Him and surrender as necessary.